Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
And hour number two, off and running, Clinton Yates in for Mace, who, yes, is taking a vacation during the pandemic.
Love this song.
This is the John Ireland playlist, all these songs, Funch. I don't know if this one was on it, Funch. Did you go off the board on this
one? I did go off the Ireland playlist for one song.
Blinding Lights? Yeah.
Baby. This is on an Mason playlist, actually.
This is a good song. And you know, it's funny. We Funch, just when, how long ago was it you asked for all of us to come up with new music to sing?
I'd have to say maybe 3 weeks ago.
And did anyone on the show, involved with the show, send you any new music?
No, not at all. No. Even Mason mentioned it last week. He didn't do anything about it.
I'll tell you a quick story. I was asked by somebody at the LA Times to be a part of their Songs of the Summer compilation, and that was the song that I wrote in about and wrote a couple words too.
Yeah. All right, so Clinton's in for Mace, and we've been talking a lot about baseball in this first hour. We talked a lot about the protest and the NFL Roger Goodell video. We haven't mentioned the NBA, and that's because it's kind of all systems go for the NBA. They are set to go down to Orlando. Some dates leaked out today. Sham Sharania from Yahoo and from Stadium leaked out some dates of how it's all going to kind of play out. The July 31st start date still looks to be the one. One thing that happened, Clinton, that was a surprise that nobody really saw coming is 22 teams are going. Now, all of us have debated whether or not it would be 16, if it would be 20, it'd be 22. Where did you fall in that debate, by the way, that they're sending 22 teams?
I mean, I get why they're doing it, to try to get to some of those local TV thresholds, but like, that seems to me, this is like the really bad, this is like the worst time to try to do that. And on both sides of that equation, if the local TV markets and the NBA can't figure out how to do that with an 8-game quickie run, like, all right, you guys need to figure that out. But overall, I just think it messes with the competition as well. Like, what if somebody gets hurt in these 8 games? What if somebody catches the virus who then can't play in the playoffs? Like, it's just too risky for what you're trying to do if you're the NBA. I feel like it's pretty obvious that with time at such a premium, the NBA has 3 goals they're trying to accomplish. A, complete a season. B, name a champion. And C, A, and B. That's all there is to it. There's not a whole lot more. I don't think that anybody's concerned about what the stats are going to be for the next 8 games in the regular season. And I don't think anybody really cares if the Grizzlies or the Pelicans are in it. If they're trying to find a way to make sure that more Zion dollars get into this situation, I think they're massively miscalculating what people are there to watch. Right now, I think you name a tournament, you name your players in your tournament and you play the tournament. This is just too risky for me, considering all the other things involved. And I'm a Wizards fan. I don't think the Wizards should be there. That's the easiest way for me to sum up what's going on in Orlando.
Right. Now, the other thing that happened today is that the other 8 teams, the 8 teams that were out, want to play. And so they have been talking to each other about a way to maybe play a tournament, maybe play games amongst each other, so they don't start farther behind the curve at the start of next season. What do you think of that?
That's a little weird. That's different for me. And that's something where, you remember during the lockout when Kevin Durant started showing up and he was just playing pickup games all across the country and that circuit got re-energized? That to me seems like something I would like a little bit cooler. I don't know that I need NBA-sanctioned pickup games. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to play basketball, I mean, y'all are basketball players. Just play basketball with your friends and do it in front of cameras if you really want to. You know, like, the NBA wasting their time getting involved in what the players do in their off time to play basketball, it seems a little weird to me, because I would like to believe you've got all hands on deck for the actual tournament of the NBA playoffs. I don't begrudge the idea. Of course they want to play basketball, but I'm not buying that it's because they want to be behind in some competitive advantage. These dudes just want something to do. And it's hard to watch your teammates, or rather your league mates, playing when you're not. I mean, I don't think you have to go much farther than that as a reason to want to do something. But overall, I mean, the NBA has to maximize their time here. You saw that story, Ireland, about how they might not even let certain guys coach because of the age factor and because of the health factor. And if you've got that looming for the teams that are going, how do you have time to be worrying about the teams that are not? I don't know. There's a lot of issues here, and I hope they pull it off, but it's sort of like baseball as well. It's like, please, just get this wrapped up as soon as possible. You guys don't even have the same issues that baseball does. You're at the end of your season. Wrap it up, name a champion, tuck it in, figure out what's going on for next season, because that's ultimately what's going to be most important because of the way the calendar drops.
Right, and I think what will happen is somewhat of a compromise like you were discussing. Like, here are the teams. Atlanta, Charlotte, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, Minnesota, and New York, the Knicks. They're pushing to engage in joint practices, maybe do a mini summer league in August. The Pistons and Cavaliers have discussed the possibility of joint practices. If you want to do all that stuff, go ahead. You know, it doesn't bother me. I just don't think necessarily they should try and monetize them, and maybe they wouldn't. They've all been dormant like every other NBA team, except for like the voluntary workouts and you know, at team facilities and stuff like that. So I understand how they'd want to stay active. If they want to, go ahead. But I don't necessarily think there's an opportunity to put it on TV and market it and do all that
Well,
stuff,
you know what they could do is you could do sort of an old school barnstorming style. I'd watch that. You know, maybe. Mix in a little all-star team and follow, you know, and go around and do 10 games somewhere. I mean, like, there are entertainment products to be had. I just don't want to see the NBA spending a whole bunch of time on lottery teams trying to figure out how to play when they've got enough of their hands full in Orlando. That's what I'm saying. You know, it's going to take a lot to get that one pulled off. Let's not worry about what the Hawks are doing because the Hawks aren't any good anyway.
All right. So I wanted to play a part of a podcast that, Matt Barnes was on, and in full disclosure here, I really like Matt. I covered him at UCLA.
I like Matt too.
I covered him at the Lakers. I think he's a smart guy. I think he's opinionated at a time when opinions are like his are valued. But he said this, and a lot of people are talking about it the other day. He said that, and this ties together what we talked about at the top of the show, how so many athletes, particularly NBA players, are involving themselves in these protests. These protests for against police brutality, against racial injustice. And here's what Matt said. Lindsay, this was on Dunk. We got this off of Dunkbait, right?
That's right, Dunkbait, our favorite site.
The site we make fun of all the time with Sliwa. Yeah, all right, so here's Matt Barnes. I think this was late Friday.
Some guys want to, you know, sit back and kind of figure out what our nation's next move is. I wouldn't be surprised if some teams or you know, some key players didn't want to play on behalf and in honor of George Floyd.
And guys have literally told you, like, yo, man, we don't really feel comfortable playing until this situation gets resolved and figured out. Is that something that's happened?
It is. You know, actually, Snoop hit me the other day, too, talking about it, because I had talked to a few guys, not to mention no names, and he said he had talked to a couple guys from the Lakers and the Clippers. You know, there's some whispers about, you know, some teams not being comfortable. Some guys want to play. Some guys don't want to play. So it'll be an interesting, you know, next couple weeks or so, you know, because they're heading to training camp, I think, at the beginning of next month, to see what this turns out to be.
All right, so Clinton, a couple of things here. I'm not sure what Matt or what anybody would be looking for in terms of resolution. Like Matt said, they want to wait and see what our country's next move is. Mm. I don't think the country could have been more aggressive than they've been. Like, everybody is protesting. You mentioned off the top of the show that in Minnesota, they're basically reinventing their police force over this. Mm-hmm. What else, if you were an NBA player or any professional athlete, NFL player, MLB player, and you wanted change, what else could you demand or look for in a situation like this?
I don't know that I took from that what he was saying is that NBA players need something out of the NBA or even the country to come back and play. It sounded to me more like he was saying, like, yo, dudes just kind of aren't really that interested in playing basketball because there's more bigger things that they want to handle their time with. That's how that kind of struck to me. Like, if you're a middling team and you've been off for a month, I realize that basketball is your job and basketball is your passion. But, like, if you're looking at this, if you're, I don't know, Jaylen Brown, for example, and you're saying, you know what? I'd probably just, as a human, just kind of rather spend my time to this cause. You know, it's not that you're looking for anything that's got to be direct or ultimatum to change. I just think that it's reasonable to think that, you know, some activism has been sparked in certain people to the point that they just, in these circumstances, might not want to go back to their old gig until they, in themselves as Americans, or whatever it may be, find some closure with this. I don't necessarily think it's as much as about, like, status in this case, always. You know what I'm saying? When I heard that, I heard something a little different than you did.
All right, so let's use this story to address the elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
These protests, like I said off the top of the show, are unprecedented and impressive. That if you look at the complexion of the people walking in the streets, you'll see black people, white people, Asian people, brown people linked arm in arm, protesting together under the same cause. In a lot of ways, it's really inspirational. But Clinton, Barack Obama, former President Obama, came out last week and said, nothing is more important than addressing this in terms of your elected officials at the state, local, and national level. And not necessarily in that order. He thought local and state politicians could have more impact on change than even the president. And he was the president for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're being honest, you look out into those sea of protesters, and most of those people in whatever city you want to pick, in Hollywood, in Dallas, in D.C., in Philadelphia, were young. Under the age of 30. And that's exactly the demographic that doesn't vote. If you look at statistics, that age group, 18 to 29, is the most likely group not to show up on election day. So let's start with this question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the changes we're all calling for, the changes in the demands we're making, can happen without voting?
I think voting is correctly rated as a proper functional tool to getting change in America, but I think that voting is perhaps overrated as the lone and most effective tool. And I say that for two reasons. Number one, we've seen every single thing that it takes for the people who do vote to get their votes counted. I'm not going to get into a whole thing about gerrymandering and so forth, but the point is that voting is not as easy as people make it seem.
Correct.
In a lot of cases. And number two, we already saw the Minnesota thing. That didn't require a vote from anyone. It was just people saying, nah, we're good. And so that's one part of this. But another thing I want to say, and I want to use this time to mention somebody specific, and that's Maya Moore, who used to play for the Minnesota Lynx.
Unbelievable. I'm glad you brought her up.
Now, one of the things that I did this summer was I spent a reasonable amount of time with her between the Congressional Black Caucus because of the situation that she decided to retire from the NBA, WNBA, excuse me, which was to basically champion the cause of a man she thought was falsely imprisoned.
And this is an elite player, too. This is like an elite top five player in the league.
Of all time. Maya Moore is one of the best basketball players in the history of the globe.
It would be the equivalent of James Harden or Kevin Durant doing it.
Anybody, exactly, absolutely. Now, one of the things that she spoke about, and the reason why this is important, is because she didn't just use her stance as a bully pulpit to tell people, get this guy I know out of jail. Out of prison, excuse me. What she said was, educate yourself on how your local system works. It ain't just about who's the city councilman. It's about who the prosecutor is. It's about who the sheriff is. So many more things are elected positions than people even realize. So I'm with you and with 44 on that down ticket stuff. I mean, I used to cover local politics. So I know full well how important that is. But I just want people to understand, it's not just voting. You know, it's the understanding of who is running for what. And sometimes it might not be voting. It might be running for office. Ferguson just got their first black mayor in their history. That's crazy.
Black female mayor.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know what I mean? So it's understanding what I think the voting process is. It's not just saying get out there because something will change, because it's not always that easy. You know, and it's still a competition in that regard. But people don't understand that they can make changes in more ways than just at the top. And that's important.
Well, and the other thing I would tell you is that what's starting to happen is if you notice that situation down at Florida State, when the best player on the team took on the head coach came out and said, a guy named Mike Norvell, who's new, came out and said, I've met individually with every player. That's how important this is to me. And their best player came out and said, no, he hasn't. He hasn't met with any of us.
Lies.
Yeah, he's flat out lying. This blank didn't happen. And then after they had their meeting, the media went to him and the guy said, you know what? I got a pledge from every guy on our team to register to vote.
That's good.
And, you know, something that I think I'll bring up an idea that I heard over the weekend that's radical, but I think they should do it. and it involves college athletes and voting, and I'll explain what it is next. We'll also take some of your phone calls in this hour. Clinton Yates is filling in for Mace. Mason in Ireland, I'm John Ireland, ESPN LA. All right, Mason in Ireland show, Clinton Yates is sitting in for Mace.
We're up.
We're going to take some of your phone calls in this hour, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. And here's the question I would ask. It's the same one I asked Clinton off the top of the show. It's one thing to protest. It's one thing to see thousands and thousands of people out in the streets. But does this mean we're actually finally going to change? And here's a good example of it, Clinton. When Trayvon Martin was killed, I was at that ESPYs when LeBron and Chris Paul and Carmelo and Dwayne Wade got on stage.
We were both there.
And said, this has to stop. This has to stop. This senseless killing of black people has got to stop. And we all walked out of there thinking, well, now maybe it will. It really didn't. You know, it just kind of, we were all outraged for a few weeks, and then we were right back there 6 months later with another name. This feels different. This feels like a tipping point. Because people are, and you made reference to it off the top of the show, people are actually taking action. In Minnesota, they're taking action. You may have seen in North Carolina today, both the Panthers and the Hornets fired their security company. Because the head of the security company came out and said something stupid about the protest. And they said, this guy doesn't get it. We can hire somebody else.
We've also seen a situation with the CrossFit guy who made a flippant remark on social media. Yep. And a lot of people are divesting themselves of that official affiliation.
So I think that stuff we were willing to put up with before, there are now actual repercussions. And we talked last segment about voting. And I wanted to bring this up with you. Eric Reveno, and it may be Ravino. I'm sorry if I'm not pronouncing his name right. He used to be the head basketball coach at Portland. He's now an assistant at Georgia Tech. And he's part of a social media campaign that came up with this idea. It's hashtag all vote, no play. And the idea is that the NCAA needs to have a mandatory day off on Federal Election Day. In other words, no games, no practices for men's or women's sports. He thinks it'll have a positive and lasting effect on the 460,000 NCAA athletes and the steady decline of 18 to 24-year-olds who don't vote. Now, I always say to Mason Clinton that I'm surprised voter turnout in relation to age isn't a bigger story. And here's what I mean. 30%. Well, actually, I'll take it even down. If you go to 18 to 24-year-olds, under 20% of the eligible voters, 18 to 24, vote. That means that 80% of those people are not voting. Over the age of 60, like ages 60 to 75, 80% of those people do vote. And it's, and like you said, it's not just federal elections. It's local. It's state. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere. If you're ever wondering how in the world, whatever your political preference is, how in the world did that person get elected? Chances are is because his voters or her voters showed up. Now, so my question for you is, would this work in other walks of life? Do you think if we made Election Day a holiday, or if we gave everybody age 18 to 25 Election Day off, that voter turnout would go up? Or is it stupid of me to think that this would help? You're either going to vote or you're not.
I could spend a week full of programming explaining why certain people don't vote. All you have to do is look at the history of who was even allowed to vote to understand why that is the way it is. But I think I just don't want to overplay the blame factor here, Ireland, in terms of like what is a motivation. Like, sure, we can cite all the statistics, but there's a reason why people over 60 vote so much. They ain't got nothing else to do. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm saying. If we gave everybody the day off.
Sure. If you give everybody the day off, yes. But I'm saying in general, this shouldn't be a one-day process. Like, I mean, I don't want to get too far off into a civics lesson here, but like voting by mail should be more popular. It's ridiculous also that in 2020, we don't have a system to vote that doesn't involve you showing up to an elementary school and standing in line for 5 hours. There should be ways to do this. We've got too many great minds that are creating too many things. If Instagram can listen to me and send me dope sweatshorts without me having to even say a word, I should be able to vote for my mayor without standing in line for 20 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what my point is that the things that we're using to try to get people to this point are not sufficient for the needs that we actually have. So yes, in theory, it would be great. And actually, on a larger level, I actually do really agree with this, because it turns into a bit of a day of service situation regarding what you were talking about with the NCAA. I think that there's something that teams represent, and not just in terms of who they are and their demographic, but you think about things like senior day when they bring their families out. That's allow a lot of programs recruit kids, is that they're a family. And if you do things like this as a group, you can understand the collective desire beyond just the point of my team has to win in terms of whatever the politics are. So yes, I think there's a lot there, but I think if you move it out of the realm of blame and pointing and like, you're not doing enough, then people are a little bit more motivated. If you make it easier for them and you make it something that they want to do, as opposed to something that you're blaming them for not doing, that's how you motivate kids in 2020, John. It's not just saying you should be doing more and you're not doing enough. I'm not saying that you were doing that, but that's how I get from a lot of people in my family. I know that, and I vote. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, look, we can't be blamed for systems that do not work. Look right at the, you know, the evidence in terms of who takes what and how the Electoral College works. Not to get too far into this, but yeah, if it were that easy to do, it would be done. It's just not. And that's a larger problem to me than who decides to do it and who doesn't.
Right. But none of that, I mean, and all those are fair points. The fact that, you know, gerrymandering is involved, the party in power often makes it as difficult for the opposition to vote as they possibly can. They'll jump through right. great hoops to do that. But Clinton, it blows me away that 80% of 18 to 24-year-olds don't vote. Colin Kaepernick doesn't vote. He's very outspoken on it. He feels
that
he's
should
so
tell
frustrated.
You something about people's trust in the system more than it should tell you about the voter or non-voter themselves. That's kind of the whole...
My question is that fixable?
It's fixable in the sense that this is why the Minnesota thing... Look, I'm going to say this very plainly. The Minnesota school system's decision to divest themselves almost even more than the overarching decision of Minneapolis to undo their police department is a bigger deal than anything I can think of from a civil rights standpoint in my lifetime. And that includes, anything that's not like law or election related. Again, just humans to humans deciding, I do not want to affiliate with these people because they make my situation more dangerous. That didn't require voting, Ireland. You know what I mean? That required people just finally having the stones to make a decision about something that actually affected their lives. And in Minnesota, not to get too far down the road on this, but this wasn't the first situation that happened. Philando Castile was a lunchroom guy that everybody loved and a janitor. He got killed too. Minneapolis was fed
Trayvon
up with this.
Trayvon Martin was 6 years ago
and
down in Florida.
You know
Florida,
what I'm saying? Right? Yeah. People were fed up with this. And so the system's about all that kind of stuff. It doesn't require necessarily all that structural change at every level. In some places, it just decides to say, you know what? You're not welcome here. It's okay. And that's a right that we have. It's just not something that we exercise because we've been forced to believe that certain things have to be the way that they always are in order for us to be safe. What they don't take into account is that the way that things always are were things that made a lot of people unsafe. And until you can admit that, then nothing's going to change structurally, never mind on election day.
Well, I listened to a podcast over the weekend. Have you listened to Flying Coach yet at all? Okay, so it's a joint podcast between Steve Kerr and Pete Carroll. And they have guests, so they host it together. And it's interesting. And so their guest over the weekend was Greg Popovich. And Popovich talked about how, and this goes back to the point you made about Minnesota, that they were able to change things in Minnesota without an election. All right. So Popovich said that, the best example, he goes, we need to make this behavior completely representable or reprehensible. We need to make it so anybody who engages in behavior like this becomes a pariah. And he used drunk driving as an example of that. He goes,
that's a good
20,
example.
30 years ago, he goes, we used to look the other way on it. And he goes,
that's a great example.
A group of people, in this case, mothers, decided to make it so reprehensible and so uncomfortable for anyone who drives drunk that doesn't get the book thrown at them that they become a pariah. You can't do it anymore. It's not, you can't even joke about it. It's not, you won't see it in movies or culture. The idea of somebody getting drunk and getting behind a wheel is reprehensible to everybody. And Popovich's point was that a group of people did that. Mothers Against Drunk Driving changed the whole way we think about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you think about this. His argument was that Popovich's argument was, this isn't a black problem. this is a white problem. Black people have been making this point for 50 years.
Oh, yeah.
He said, but he goes, until the rest of us get on board. He had a great line. So this is not an original John Ireland thought. I'm taking all this from Pop.
Okay.
He goes, I don't think anybody on this podcast, and it was him and Kerr and Pete Carroll. He goes, I don't think anybody on this podcast is ever going to walk around with a swastika on their jacket or wearing a Ku Klux Klan hat. We're not going to do it. We're not racist. But he said, it's not enough to be not racist anymore. You have to be anti-racist. And there's a difference.
That's the exact definition of what Black Lives Matter is. That's literally what it is. It's not matter in the neutral. It's matter in the concept of the positivity of life. It matters in the context of when some kid gets shot by some hillbilly and you say, oh, he got arrested 4 years ago for shoplifting a pair of sneakers. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? What does that have to do with this? And even if that did happen, that means he deserved to lose his life. It's about understanding not just that you become a pariah, but that it's wrong to believe that certain people can reasonably lose their life just for committing a crime. That's what we don't seem to understand and be able to process, is that whenever something happens, people are like, oh, no angel. That argument. And it's like, yo, man, that is literally not valuing a life as much as you value your own. And that's what Black Lives Matter actually means. And Popovich hit the nail on the head.
All right. So we'll take some calls on this. If you guys want to weigh in, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. By the way, we're still doing Fast Track. That's coming up at 5:30. And also in the 5 o'clock hour, if you didn't see it, go on Twitter and watch Arash Markazi's video from Las Vegas this weekend. Arash was out there covering the UFC event, and it's surreal. He took a video in a casino. It was at the Cosmopolitan. And if you watch it, you'll think it was from a year ago. Hundreds of people walking around, nobody wearing a mask. It's almost like the pandemic is over. Arash is going to join us next hour to talk about that. Clinton Yates, in for Mace. I'm John Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason and Ireland show. Clinton Yates is in for Mace. And we're working our way until 6 o'clock when Sliwa will get in here. And Mason is, yes, on vacation during a pandemic. He told me, Clinton, he was taking his talents to Palm Desert. So I don't know if he did it or not. But
does that mean he's gambling? Is there a casino there? What's happening there?
I don't know. He plays poker, but he's not a big gambler. I think he went out there to see his folks. His mom and, as he calls him, not stepdad Leo, live out in the desert. he'll be back next week. In the meantime, we thank Clinton for filling in. You already did Around the Horn today, too, right?
I did. I'm knocking over my stuff here. Yeah, I did do Around the Horn earlier today. It was myself, Mina Kimes, and Frank Isola. And, you know, the setup's a little different, you know, around the home, as we like to say. So I want to shout out to everybody who listens in. I got my set operating in my kitchen. Things are good. So, you know, good show today, on again tomorrow, and keeping it rolling.
Okay, so I wanted to get your take on this. And this surprised me. I covered Shaq for most of his career. My first year in Los Angeles was Shaq's first year here, 1996. And I, you know, so I got to cover those Kobe Shaq teams. I was a sideline reporter. I got to travel with him. It was a really great experience for all involved.
Nice.
So Shaq came out today, it came out today, that Shaq spoke to the New Orleans Saints as a team on a Zoom meeting on Thursday. And Shaq said he urged the Saints to stay unified after the Drew Brees comments. So, you know, Drew Brees came out, a bunch of people on his own team, came out against him. Michael Thomas, his favorite receiver, came out against him. And it became kind of a big deal. And the visit from Shaq was a surprise by Sean Payton. And so Shaq was on the meeting, and maybe he didn't think this would get out, but he said, hey, you guys got to stick together no matter what. Don't let the media divide you guys. That's what happened. They're going to try, and here's Shaq's exact quote, they're going to try and divide you just like they divided us with the Lakers. Me and Kobe, we had a great thing going, but the media divided our team. We could have won 5 championships. Stay strong. Don't let the media divide you. And it surprised me because the media loved that team, Shaq and Kobe. Like, right. They were, Shaq and Kobe were very outspoken. Like, Shaq would talk to the beat writers, and Kobe would talk to the beat writers, and the quotes that I think Shaq is referring to that quote-unquote divided the team were provided by Shaq and Kobe.
Also, this is just a completely different situation. Like, I get it, and, you know, Shaq is one of those guys who likes being involved in a lot of things. You know, he does a lot of commercials. Shaq shows up pretty often if there's a camera and some money and he wants to talk, which is completely respectable and fine by me. One of the funniest jokes I ever heard Shaq say was that Shaq was in 25 movies because every single time you say his name in a flick, you got to pay him, which is hilarious. But this is a lot for Shaq, in my opinion. I don't know if Shaq knows guys on that team. I don't really know necessarily why Sean Payton would have him there, but like...
Well, he went to high school in Texas.
But yeah, no, I knew that. But I mean, I'm just saying that, like, yeah. Whether or not he has any specific linkage to this team beyond his where he's from. You know what I'm saying? Because if that were not the case, he would understand that in Louisiana, like, this is, I mean, this is a problem just like it is everywhere else. I mean, this is not really even about Drew Brees on some level, you know? And so I get it. But this is Shaq's personality, I think, coming out. And to the point that he's making, though, we were asked about this on Around the Horn, and I think the Saints got real issues. I think this is a real discussion that as a team, you've got to figure out, and I don't care if Drew Brees apologized or not. You know, the fact that he even thought to say that, I think, is something that could rankle a decent amount of players in that locker room, just because it's clear that he doesn't understand the world that he's living in. I mean, Drew Brees' wife came out and said something as well, and so that gives you an idea of just how sort of serious that family is. I don't want to discredit that. But if they don't think that this is going to come up again, they got something else happening. Because let me tell you something. George Floyd ain't going to be the last brother who police shoot, who's unarmed, shoot or kill, who's unarmed. Trust me on that. And so if people start pressing Drew Brees about what he thinks about the next thing, it's going to come up again in the locker room. So while it might not divide them, I think it's a little bit Pollyannish to say that they shouldn't even talk about it or that somehow it shouldn't be discussed. You know what I mean? Like, because it might rightfully divide them because people might have different opinions because you're allowed to do that in America.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I was around those Shaq and Kobe teams. Shaq and Kobe got along great on the court. That's why they went to 4 finals in 5 years. I mean, right. People love to say that, you know, they hated each other. They just had vastly different approaches. Kobe was the first one to practice and the last one to leave. Shaq was the last one to practice and the first one to leave. And Shaq's position was, I'm so dominant that no one can stop me. And he was pretty much right. And he didn't understand changing anything. And Kobe said, no, we got to change with the league. We got to change with the times. And that eventually broke him up. But I just thought that was a weird thing from Shaq.
That is, hey, it is real weird.
Yeah, we got a bunch of people online want to talk about what we were talking about with the protest. Here's Keenan in Compton. Hey, Keenan, you're on 710 ESPN. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, I wanted to weigh in on the Black Lives Matter. Because I think all lives matter. I'm a black guy. But when we say Black Lives Matter, we want to change it. I speak to you, and I tell them Black Lives Matter has to matter to us. My son was murdered in Compton. I have a lot of friends from the time 13 and that died in Compton from my own people. And then I also have a friend, Avery Cody Jr., who was murdered by the sheriff. He got on the stand and lied, and they found the video, so they convicted him. But I think once we change the perception to the world, how we are as a people, we can be better. But it has to start with self.
Right. But Keenan, do you think, Keenan, do you think this is...
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, I want to interject here, if I may, because I'm sorry, Keenan, for your losses, and I want to make this point, is that the notion that black folks have to do better for themselves before our lives have to be taken seriously is messed up on every level. And let me explain why. Because it implies that death is the only thing that makes sense outside of success. And let me show you this personal example. I'm 39 years old. One of my best friends who I grew up on my block with in D.C. on Georgia Avenue, he got shot by the police when we were 20. And you know what? He didn't die. But it did ruin his life. Do you see what I'm saying here? The point is that we should not be in a binary in which we have to either prove our self-worth or our deaths are written off. Lives get ruined by police brutality, whether or not we are in a grave or not. And so this notion that it has to be either all or nothing is the problem, not the solution. You know, and that's something I want to get in people's minds, is that it's not always about who dies. It's about everybody affected on down the line. That's what generational trauma is.
All right, we'll keep the phones open, 877-710-ESPN. Clinton Yates in for Mace. Mason in Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, Mason in Ireland show. Clinton Yates is filling in for Mace. And
new summer banger.
Yeah.
Love it.
And, yeah, well, I have a bunch of old stuff in there. Funch, that might be the oldest one. I don't know if I put. I'm a big Ray Charles guy, though.
No, that's
by
great.
The way, I still say best biography performance ever: Jamie Foxx as Ray Charles. Basically 5 minutes into that movie, you think you're watching Ray Charles.
Yeah,
it's an unbelievable performance. Won an Oscar, so it's. I'm not saying anything nobody knows, but all right. Anyway, earlier in the show, Clinton and I were talking about how Matt Barnes, who the former Laker, former Clipper. Played at UCLA. Matter of fact, Funch, let's play that. Matt Barnes was on a podcast, and we took this off of Dunkbait, and Barnes said that you should keep your eye on Orlando as to whether or not all the players we think are going to play are going to play. Here's what he said.
Some guys want to, you know, sit back and kind of figure out what our nation's next move is. I wouldn't be surprised if some teams or you know, some key players didn't want to play on behalf and in honor of George Floyd.
And guys have literally told you, like, yo, man, we don't really feel comfortable playing until this situation gets resolved and figured out. Is that something that's happened?
It is. You know, actually, Snoop hit me the other day, too, talking about it, because I had talked to a few guys, not to mention no names, and he said he had talked to a couple guys from the Lakers and the Clippers. You know, there's some whispers about, you know, some teams not being comfortable. Some guys want to play. Some guys don't want to play. So it'll be an interesting, you know, next couple weeks or so, you know, because they're heading to training camp, I think, at the beginning of next month, to see what this turns out to be.
And Gus from Brentwood wants to weigh in on that. Hey, Gus, you're on 710 ESPN. How you doing?
Gus, what's up?
Gus going once. Gus,
yes,
you there?
Hello, guys.
Yeah, there you are.
Mr. Ireland.
Yeah, Gus, you're on. Go ahead, man.
Yes, Mr. Yates. How you guys doing? Yeah, what I quickly wanted to touch base was that this is gaining traction. Like, Mr. Ireland, I'm not trying to, you know, like, stomp on what you said, but you said that you're like, oh, well, you know, like, you know, like, what more can be done? It's like, yesterday, Los Angeles made worldwide news because almost 2 weeks after George Floyd was murdered, we had the largest gathering. 50,000 people marched in Hollywood.
Well, and Gus, that wasn't just here. That wasn't just in L.A. That was all over the country. I mean, if you've seen the pictures from Philadelphia. And that was my question to Clinton, and I'm curious what you think, Gus, is do you think this is a tipping point? Does this feel different than it ever has before? Because to me, it does. I don't know what other reaction do you agree with Matt Barnes? Do you think guys are going to think twice about going down there?
This is what I will say to you as far as how we want justice as a nation. We want justice as a whole. Almost 11,000 people were arrested because they were protesting the curfews, whatever. Almost 11,000. The three officers that murdered Breonna Taylor are still walking around free. So this is something of where it's like, okay, we made noise for Minneapolis. Now we need to make noise for Breonna Taylor. So I think that players, yes, I absolutely believe. Will it be the players of the level of LeBron James, Anthony Davis, you know, Kawhi Leonard? Who knows? Who knows? But I do believe that you know, that this is a tipping point, Mr. Ireland. You are 100% right. This is a big tipping point.
It feels like it.
But just how far to which side will it tilt, and how much of a tipping point we're going to have?
Thanks for the phone call, Gus. I'll say quickly, one of the things that I think people misunderstand about, like, activism and about black folks in general is that, like, yo, as I said this before, as much as guys, the concept of I might not feel comfortable doesn't necessarily mean I'm putting on a t-shirt and I'm going downtown and holding up a sign. It means, like, yo, dog, I'm tired. You know what I mean? And I don't mean tired, like, physically. I mean, what people don't seem to understand about the daily threat of living as a black person in America is that there is a very serious mental tax it takes on you, you know? And between COVID, between trying to risk your family, and between everything that's happened in this country, I can completely understand how some basketball player might say, you know what? This is just not where my head is right now, and right. I don't want to do this. I think that's just as much a part of this as it is this notion that everybody's going to get out there and start protesting. You know, being black in America comes with a large amount of psychological saturation when it comes to violence. That's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about generational trauma. And for some of these guys, you know, it's like, I've been doing this, I've been looking at this the whole time, I'm daggone sure risking my career for what? A six seed? I don't know that I want to do that, man. I got better times. I got better things to do, and I got a family to feed and a family to be around while I'm still here. I think that some of this isn't as militant as people might be thinking, and it's just a human nature thing as to what people are capable of overall.
Well, I hope if that happens, Clinton, that and I've said this from the beginning, is I hope people would look at that with a great deal of empathy.
Yeah.
I think this is a time for you, for all of us, myself included, to put yourself in other people's shoes and say, you know, they may be feeling things that I'm not feeling. And you can ask questions and you can talk about it and put some issues out there in the open that maybe in the past we weren't comfortable talking about. So I hope no matter what happens, that people don't jump to conclusions and criticize somebody for making a decision like that, that they would have empathy and learn what that person was thinking about. For example, I believe, I was kicking this around with Mason last week, I believe that if Donald Sterling happened today, that happened in 2014, okay? If Donald Sterling happened today, I don't think those two teams play. I don't think the Clippers and Warriors play. You agree?
No, the Clippers walk off the court. The Clippers don't even come out.
The Warriors
that
would
whole
go with
motion,
them, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that happens. But I think you're exactly right. But I want to make this quick point about that thing about not playing. One of the things we used to hear all the time was, oh, you don't take a knee during the game. You got to sacrifice something more. You got to be more like Muhammad Ali. First of all, I disagree with the notion that sacrifice is required in order for protest. That's a whole other discussion. I'm not going to get into the poli-sci element of that. But what I'm saying is this. If some guy doesn't want to play, that is a sacrifice. Just because they're not on the front lines, as you consider them, or you, not you, but one might consider them, of a protest, doesn't mean they're not making a sacrifice. So it can't be both. Don't be criticizing guys who aren't comfortable playing for whatever reason. It doesn't always have to be a black fist in the air yelling and screaming about Black Lives Matter to just say, you know what? I just can't do this. And if you want to add up and give all this credit to all these other people who took stances, you have to give credit to people that just kind of say, this is not what I'm here to do right now. You know, Jaylen Brown went down, drove double-digit
like
hours.
15 hours.
You know what I'm saying? To go do this. And if he just says, you know what, actually, I'd rather do this. You know, and I'm not going to have to be some yelling guy on a corner in order to do it. I just kind of want to help people now. I'm not going to be upset about that at all. It's a reasonable human decision in the United States of America in 2020.
Well, if you think about this, all those examples you were citing, you know, Muhammad Ali, for his views, you know, he was a draft protester and then got thrown in jail. But his career, Clinton, was torpedoed. Like he couldn't get a fight. They wouldn't approve him to fight in the United States. That's why he had all those fights in remote parts of the world. Tommy Smith and John Carlos were basically blackballed after they threw those fists in the air in Mexico City. They weren't out there doing the interview circuit. Nobody wanted to talk to him. And Colin Kaepernick gave up his career for taking a knee. So maybe, hopefully, we're at a point where if people are trying to make a point now, we'll ask them, hey, what is your point? And maybe empathize a little bit more with what they're trying to make and find out if the point they're making is true, which
sometimes
is what I think we're learning
just,
now.
And sometimes the point is just, Ireland, that they're tired and they're just fed up with the crap and we shouldn't have to deal with this mess. Anyway, that's what my point is. Sometimes you just want to be left alone because the goal is equality, not revenge.
Right. And if you look back on all three of those incidents I mentioned, Tommy Smith and John Carlos, Muhammad Ali, Colin Kaepernick, I think Clinton, 100 years from now, when both you and I are gone, all those guys are going to be on the right side of history.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? History is a weird arc. It goes back. But I would say right now it's looking pretty good for all three of those guys to be on the right side of history. All right, coming up one more hour, Mason in Ireland. Arash Markazi is going to join us and talk about what he saw in Las Vegas this weekend. If you didn't see it, you're not going to believe it. And we also got Fast Track coming for you at 5:30. Mason in Ireland, Clinton Yates in for Mace, 710 ESPN.